Since the arrival of Warden Thérèse Gascon in the spring of 2002, the Bath Institution has seen many changes, including a long list of cutbacks. In the following section, Peter Collins speaks about the cutbacks to food for prisoners and how this affects them, about how cutbacks have affected prisoners whose religion or spirituality is different than that of the dominant Protestant, Anglican, and Catholic religions, and about cutbacks to recreation time as well as to cost-effective health and hygiene products. I'd like to first off speak about the cutbacks, and there have been many recent cutbacks in the Bath Institution since the arrival of Warden Thérèse Gascon.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for the last 10 months or so. These cutbacks have affected many aspects of the prisoners' lives. First, I'd like to speak about the food cutbacks, and if you could explain in detail what they are and what they mean to the prisoners.
Bath Institution is a low-medium institution, and it used to be a camp setting, but then they put a couple of perimeter security fences and raised the security rating of the prison to low-medium. So some of the privileges that they had as a camp here translated into the increase in security, and we were allowed to keep these things. Some of the things that we were allowed to do were your family was allowed to cook a meal and bring it into the visiting room. So, you weren't eating out of, a vending machine. You could eat your mother's homemade cooking or your wife's cooking or things like that. And in the entire course of that program, there had never been one time that it had been that they had found that someone had been trying to introduce contraband through the food. So that had never happened, but for some reason, Miss Gascon decided that she would cut that off, and she cited security reasons for doing it, although there never were any that we were aware of.
What about specialty foods, not just during family visits, but also during social events?
Okay.
These have been eliminated. How does this affect prisoners?
Well, there's a number of ways that this has impacted prisoners. Before, we used to be able to save up, and maybe once or twice a year, we were able to afford a specialty food item. Say, some people eat steak or, any high-end sort of cuts of meat. Even pizza, I guess, would be something that we're not allowed to have anymore, but what she's done is stopped us from being able to order food in, which was, I guess, in some ways, supporting the local economy for around this city. Like before, the Native Brotherhood was the Aboriginals who are housed here used to be able to have food brought in from their reserves, and now they're not allowed to have that. I'm trying to think of how this is impacting us. See, I'm a vegan, so I don't eat any of these meats and things, so it doesn't really affect me that much. But I do know from listening to guys and speaking that it's affected them. They're not allowed to, on social events, where you're allowed to have one social event a year where family can come in, and we're not allowed to have anything that she considers fancy.
And another aspect of the cutbacks is in regards to spirituality and religion. And with these cutbacks, could you explain how this affects prisoners who are First Nation peoples in regards to their spirituality and prisoners of the Muslim faith, and how this compares to Protestant, Anglican, and Catholic services that are available at the Bath Institution?
Okay, well, the Brotherhood, the Aboriginals, are having repeated difficulties getting any services in here, and it often has to do with elders not being allowed in or not being contracted, and you know, the majority of the services appear to be going just to the traditional Anglican, Christian, Protestant, Roman Catholic services. It always seems to go to them. I think the Native Brotherhood haven't had a sweat lodge ceremony in over a half a year, and weekly there's traditional services for Christians, you know, on maybe three or four services a week for them. So in that sense, there's a big disparity. The Muslims, they're not even allowed to use the spirituality center, which is the name of our chapel area. They say this to, I suppose, to encompass the concept that it's for all different faiths, but it seems to only accommodate certain faiths. The Muslims have to pray in a little hallway outside the spirituality center. That's not open for them. So if you can imagine them in a little prison hallway praying, that's how they have to do that. And the Brotherhood actually doesn't get, you know, doesn't appear to get any service.
You mentioned earlier that you are a vegan and you are also a Buddhist.
Yes.
And I was wondering, with being a vegan, if we could return to the food issue, have you been able to receive an adequate vegan diet in prison? And have you had any problems with that?
I've had several problems with it over the 20-year period, but at this institution I haven't had the type of problems that I've had at other institutions. Other institutions have consistently attempted to either, I don't know why, but to change my diet by not feeding me the appropriate amount or the necessary nutritional requirements to, you know, maintain my body weight. So on three occasions I've actually been fed a diet so small that I've lost 30 pounds, you know, on three occasions that's happened. So there's been difficulties. I think the main reason is that the system doesn't like any variation in its assembly line food service.
And would this also be a problem for Muslims who have to have a fairly strict diet?
Yeah, there's incredible problems for them. And for people of Jewish faith, they have problems here as well. And I think those surface at all institutions because, again, because of the predisposition to prefer it to be easy, to try to feed everybody the same meal, and, you know, a failure to recognize that these aren't, you know, just whims that people are following, that they're actual, you know, that they have to observe these religious the Muslims have problems with their diet here, and so do Jewish people, which is another reason why it was short-sighted of the warden to cut off the food at the socials and PFEs and visits, because when a Muslim or a Jewish person or a vegan goes up to the visiting room and they have this, you know, they have a few different articles of food that are in these vending machines, you don't know if, you know, like they don't know if it's kosher food, or they don't know if, you know, there's no pork products in it or animal products. So there's problems there. And someone's actually filed a lawsuit against her based on that. So there's currently litigation underway on that issue. But, you know, the CSC has a predisposition to dig its heels in and refuse to acknowledge any wrongdoing. They're very rigid in their thinking that way.
In regards to the recreation time at the Bath Institution, there have been many cutbacks and actually eliminations, like the prisoners can no longer go out into the yard after 9 p.m. And also during the holidays, this has been cut as well. For what reasons did the Bath Institution give for cutting back this recreation time, and how is this affecting the prisoners' morale?
The standard response to any change in operating procedures at the institution has always been for security reasons. It's such a easy catch-all phrase, and how do you argue with it? You're in a prison, so almost every decision they make is based on security. But when you step back and take a look at the situation, you can see that there's really not, it's not that easy. The institution's been open for 30 years. For 30 years, there's been yard at night after 9 o'clock till 10:30, and then that's when, you know, they do the night count, and you have to stay in your cells till the next day. The reason they say that we can't have yard after 9 o'clock is because they can't identify who the people are walking around in the yard because it's dark, they say. The problem, obviously, with that is as the seasons change, the time that it gets dark either becomes earlier or later, and, you know, sometimes it gets dark before 9, so that argument doesn't hold a lot of water. And on top of that, they issue us these green coats that are for winter, although they're, you know, really not winter coats. They're just, you know, they look like winter coats. They offer no warmth, but they have hoods. And if you're wearing a hood in the day or wearing a hood at night, how do you identify that person? So again, there's another reason that it doesn't hold that much water. So that with regard to a night yard. As for why they cut back on the recreation, the recurring theme in answering that is that they say they don't have enough staff, that there's not enough staff each time they do that. So, you know, after people work all day for their, maybe they make $4 a day or $6 a day, after that, there's supposed to be a recreation period. But it seems that every time that there's not enough staff, we lose the recreation staff because there's two staff who are supposed to be posted in the recreation area during recreation period, but they're always the ones who don't appear. So they say, you know, that there's just not enough staff, and she won't pay for overtime. So if, say, two staff don't show up or call in sick, then there's no recreation. Or if somebody gets injured and two staff have to escort the person to hospital, then, again, we lose the recreation staff. So I think that has some impact on the morale, you know, because they're, again, this is, you know, while there's open space in the institution, if you're not allowed out in it at night, not, you might as well consider that it's not there. You know, and if the recreation area where you are allowed to go at night is closed, then you might as well say that's not there as well. So I'd say during her stay here, there's been more violence. There seems to be an increase in violence. There seems to be an increase in incidents, people getting shipped out for, either involvement in alcohol or drug-related things or in violence. So that may be a direct result of having, you know, such a repressive regime take over the institution and take away all these privileges and then, remove recreational hours, and that may be.
Another thing is that the cost-effective health and hygiene items have been eliminated. Now, prisoners can only buy health products or hygiene products at a much higher price. Was there any rationale in the reason why the warden decided this?
Well, there's always rationale. Whether it's rationale is another question altogether, obviously. Originally, back 10 years ago, we used to get items like toothpaste, deodorant, shampoo, soap free. You know, it was issued to us. And we used to get Tylenol issued to us and certain, health things issued to us. Now, they've cut those back without increasing our pay and made us responsible for purchasing them. So what our canteen guy does is he tries to shop around to get the most cost-effective deals for the population. But to do that, you need to be able to shop around. He tries to look through the, those little flyers that come around to, Walmart or Shoppers Drug Mart, and they may have sales that are better than the regional store that CSC always uses. The warden won't let us use those. She wants us to go through the regional store. So why, she says it's too labor-intensive for her staff to have to go out and pick that stuff up. And even if they deliver, she says it's too labor-intensive for them.
So this must be affecting financially the prisoners quite a bit.
Yeah. If you can buy, 100 Tylenol for a couple dollars or can buy 40 Tylenol for $3.50. You know, that makes a big difference. You know, especially when, you know, it's a half a day's pay, you know, just for the Tylenol. Of course, they have put in a hygiene account now, but that amounts to 24 cents a day that they give us to buy hygiene and health items.